if you can play Beethoven, you can tick the box because you're musical. And that comes through reading his piece and playing it exactly as we imagine he would have played it, correctly, right? And it sets up a culture that says, I'm not musical unless I can play what a musical person who's proven because they've got written music can play. And I say, no.
You're watching Tim Topham TV, the Piano Teaching Podcast, episode number 65. Welcome back, everyone, to today's episode of the Tim Topham TV Piano Teaching Podcast, where we're talking all about imagination, creativity, emotion, and improvisation with the younger students. And my guest today, Lindell Kennedy from Perth in Western Australia, is just a superstar in this area, and she's doing something which in itself is incredibly creative. Today's episode is sponsored by Make More, Teach Less, the summer camp training program by Jennifer Fox of Music Educator Resources. As I've been mentioning in the last few episodes, I'm really keen to promote the idea of people down in Australia here and in the Southern Hemisphere running summer camps over the December-January period, which is when our summer is, of course. So if you're interested in this, then I do suggest you check out Jennifer's resource. It is fantastic. It takes you through the process of running your first summer camp, literally from start to finish. So if you've never done it before, you're going to find out all about the logistics, the scheduling, marketing activities, what you need to know, and before you start. So hopefully you don't make any mistakes and you can have a fantastically successful first summer camp. The course comes with 9 video modules and a whole heap of bonuses and downloads and worksheets. And she also gives us a link to her summer camp lesson plans. It's all on the show notes page. It's all on the summer camp page at my blog. It's timtopham.com/summer-camp or summer-camp, depending on what you call that little line that connects two words. Now, I'm also really happy to offer all my podcast listeners, you guys are the faithful ones, right? You're tuning in each week, getting the information that you want that's going to help make you a better teacher straight into your earbuds. Whatever you're doing, I really value your listening, and I wanted to reward that by offering you $100 off an annual membership to my Inner Circle community. If you're interested in finding out more about that very special offer, which lasts for as long as you remember, head to the show notes page. And today's show notes are at timtopham.com/episode-64. My guest today, Lindell, has spent over 30 years teaching students to discover, own, and love their unique musical personality. Her program, Inner Musician, Play a Story, is an improvisational adventure empowering students of all ages and proficiencies to enjoy expressing their own story through music. We have a real connection and agreement about the fact that the first few months of piano lessons for students, particularly the younger students, should be as far from reading notation as it could possibly be. And if you're wondering what on earth that you should be doing instead of reading notation and getting out a method book, then here is one example of the most creative stuff that you can do with your students. Her programs use stories and movies to inspire and nurture teachers and students alike, helping them to discover their inner musician. I know you're going to love hearing about this, and I'm really excited to bring it to you. Today's episode is with Lindell, and here's the interview. Lindell Kennedy, welcome to the podcast. So great to have you here.
Thanks, Tim. It's really exciting. I'm so pumped. I've been hanging out to have a chat with you.
I know. Well, look, you're one of my favourite teachers over there in Perth, of course, in the west side of Australia. You're also one of the Inner Circle expert teachers. So you're one of the crew that are supporting all the teachers in my Inner Circle. So thank you very much in advance for that. And we're going to be exploring today some ideas for creativity and improvising particularly with the really young children, because you have some great ideas that are completely out of left field, I think, but work and have such amazing impact. So let's get started with a little bit about your background, just a quick bit of your history. How did you come to be doing this kind of really creative, fun teaching that you're doing now?
Oh, look, my teaching history, my background is actually really diverse. So, you know, I had the traditional old lady down the street with the ruler on the knuckles thing.
Oh, gosh. It's amazing that you're doing it. You're still playing. Far out.
I know. And you know what gets me is that, you know, I'm not that old. Okay, so I'm 50 today.
Oh, it's your birthday. I didn't know that. Happy birthday. Now, of course, everyone listening to this, though, it won't be your birthday when it goes live, but happy birthday for today.
Thank you. It'll still be my jubilee year, so, you know, they can celebrate me. But, you know, what amazes me is that, you know, how many people just within our generation have had that experience in their piano lessons. That's just really wrong, right? But I also did a little bit of Suzuki. A lot of Yamaha Foundation was part of my learning history. In fact, you know, I think that was my those years that I spent there with my amazing teacher, Ronnie Waite, in Melbourne, actually, because I am Victorian, yay. You know, she just mentored me in teaching and in learning the love of being self-expressive in music and how to teach kids and adults, and, you know, she's just an amazing person. Also did masterclasses with the late Brian May in composition. That was an awesome experience and opportunity. He's an Aussie composer, done movies, and I think he did the ABC Orchestra for a while there. So, you know, I've had a real mixed bag of performance, competition, all that sort of stuff when I was young, as we most of us do. But I have to say that while I was teaching, I had four beautiful children, and when my oldest son turned 4 or 5, I was looking for something really fantastic to birth in him a true love of music to his heart, because for me, that's what captured me for my lifetime, is that I learned that music was a part of who I was. And that's what I really wanted for my kids. And I was looking for stuff and I could not find stuff. I mean, love kinder music and all of those things. But once we get onto the piano, then it becomes almost like an academic exercise. At least it did at that stage from what I knew was out there. So, you know, it takes somebody from left field to teach something left field. So to create something from left field. We have another term for that, weird. Yeah. Crazy.
So let's look, I think let's keep the story going. You found this need. What happened next?
Okay, so I was looking for means by which to do this for my older son, Nat, and then didn't really find a lot, but started experimenting with taking my little playgroup kids and with their moms, and we'd sit there and we'd, I guess in hindsight, it kind of modelled itself a little bit on the, you know, the Peter and the Wolf idea of telling stories. We were making up stories and we had, you know, 6 keyboards all out. And, of course, they all have their own sounds, so, you know, harpsichords and, you know, violins and pianos and all that sort of stuff. And so it was kind of imaginative right from the beginning. Nothing structured. We were just mucking around. But it was so much fun, and I realized, if nothing else, during those few years I was capturing their heart for music. That was really clear evidence. So moving down a little bit, and I'm sort of just mucking around with ideas and really not sure whether this was even something I could commit to, because I knew it was going to be huge if I did. Creating a new curriculum, crumbs, you know. Out of your right mind, woman. And so then little Josephine comes along. She's my fourth daughter. And I remember one day, they were on holiday. It was the first day of school, and little Josephine's my last leftover child, and so she's off colouring in, drawing. I don't know what she was doing somewhere. And, you know, every mother has this moment. Huh? What is it that I used to enjoy doing in my former life? Because I just am so busy. And I went, I'm going to turn my stereo on full bore and listen to my favourite music, and I'm not going to do anything else. So my favourite music at that time was actually the soundtrack to The Mission.
Oh, yes, beautiful. Ennio Morricone, yeah, beautiful.
Love it. Yeah. So, you know, you can imagine, right, if you know that music, and to all of our listeners, go listen to it.
Absolutely.
It's just beautiful. And so I've got it up four ball. I've got my eyes closed and I am transported to another world, just where I wanted. And I open my eyes and here's little four-year-old Josephine sitting on the steps with tears streaming down her face. And I'm going, hang on a second, she's only four. How could she relate to this music? And she has no experience like I do. I can connect it. If nothing else, I connect it to the music, to the movie.
Yeah.
So I asked her, you know, what's wrong?
Why are you sad?
Are you crying? Yeah. And she just said, oh, this music is so sad.
Oh, wow. Is that amazing? Yeah. We almost think that four-year-olds, they don't relate to music like that.
That's exactly what I knew to be true.
Yeah.
We had the Wiggles, right?
Yeah, everything's happy.
Spaghetti. And so I pulled her into my arms and I turned the music down. I actually didn't turn it off. I just turned it down because I was really intrigued to find out what was going on in her head. What was she relating to and where was she getting her associations from? So we cuddled up on the couch and I said to her, what's happening in the music? What can you see happening? And she just looked at me and she said, oh, it's a butterfly and it's lost its mummy and it's so sad. And I just went, of course, this is her world. This is her life. She has experienced things, emotional things. And so inevitably as the music turns mood and shifts gears and whatever, we just kept listening and it became more hopeful and upbeat. And she just turned around and she said, oh, it's okay, she's found her mommy.
Oh, how adorable.
And so, you know, we were, and so then we just started making up stories to this one soundtrack of these adventures of this butterfly. And I guess it's no coincidence that the first journey in my program follows the journey of the wind in the forest meeting this little butterfly. So that's really where it started. That's its genesis.
It is so fantastic to hear that story because I've known you for a long time and I've known your programs and I love what you do, obviously. But I've actually never heard that genesis, the story of how it all began. So that is beautiful. The background to that story, I've never heard anything like it. Isn't that wonderful?
It is. And it's a legacy that, you know, we continue to this day. She plays beautifully, you know.
How old is she now?
She's 14, so this is 10 years ago that we started this crazy route.
Brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. The other thing that I picked up while you're talking was using sounds on keyboards. Paul and I, in our recent workshops around Australia, we've been talking about this. We often forget as teachers that so many of our students are playing on digital pianos, which have all these sounds and rhythms and beats and things in them. And I find, I don't know about you, but unless I really ask my students to explore them, they don't really think to press all those buttons for some reason. That's what I find anyway. We have to encourage them.
All right. And you know what? I think it's partly our culture of the piano lesson. It's almost frowned on. You should use
the piano sound.
At least an acoustic piano, but if you can't do that, at least use the piano sound.
Yeah, it's true, but we're missing out on so much, isn't it? I mean, you hold down a big chord with a string sound and, wow, we've got a soundscape.
A pipe organ, for crying out loud.
A pipe organ, yeah.
And I have to say, laying down foundations of orchestration for future composers, that is huge. If we could just touch on those ideas while they're in our care, you know, that just opens a whole new career line actually to them, especially with the whole incredibly fast-moving industry of gaming music, which they're so into. That's orchestration. That's all it's about. So play a flute like a flute, not like a pipe organ.
Yeah.
And you'll get this idea of how to off subject.
I know. But, you know, it's an important argument because there is still a very strong anti-digital piano, although I think it might be changing because the technology is improving very fast and the quality of digital pianos now is pretty extraordinary. And I think the lines are going to blur and eventually cross completely.
Yeah. And I have to say, you know, I was watching all your podcasts on internet teaching, and I've since downloaded the, you know, the Internet MIDI program, because I have quite a few internet students all around Australia. It's mind-blowing that using a MIDI keyboard, my students out in outback Australia play my instrument in my studio. It comes out of my instrument and they're playing way remote. It just does my head in.
It's so incredible, isn't it?
Bring on keyboards.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes us so much more versatile and it makes the world a smaller place.
And for those people interested, if you missed that episode, that was with Mario Ojero on taking your online teaching to the next level. And that was episode number 53, which you can find in the archives. All right, well, let's go on and talk. Oh, just quickly, what does your studio look like today with the number of students and that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Look, over the last few years, I've sort of averaged between 30 and 50, 50 being a lot of teaching while I was developing a program. It sent me a little bit, you know, wacky. Yeah. But I've sort of tried to reduce it now because I am so involved in making sure that we're looking after the resources that we have for our teachers to play a story. So I actually don't know how many students I have. It's probably just under that 30 mark.
Yep.
Typically my students are either groups of 4, 5, or 6, which I love because I thrive on the energy dynamic in that kind of setting, and because I'm a very creative and imaginative and descriptive teacher. You know, we have all this fantastic, you know, back and forth with ideas. So I gain my most energy as a teacher from teaching in those small group circumstances. And, you know, no one has headphones. It's all on the one piano, actually, and we do lots of round robining and sharing ideas, jumping up and down off the piano stool.
Yep.
But I also do teach private as well. I have a few students who, you know, sort of aren't a perfect fit for any groups that I might have running at the time. So a couple of autistic children that are better suited to a private environment who I then sometimes bring into groups, which is really fun. That's a thrill. Especially for my parents of those kids. Yeah.
And it's great to know that your ideas, your program works with groups of children but only one instrument, because that's a great way for people, if they're interested in group work, they don't have to go and buy a lab and build a new room on their house.
You don't need all you need is enough seats for bottoms, really.
Yeah.
And all of my classes, including my privates actually, unless they're older kids or adults, I have my parents in there participating.
Great.
Not even just observing, but they're up around the piano. So I have sort of like two layers of, you know, people. Students, really. Mm-hmm. So I've got the kids in the front and the home coaches behind, and they are learning alongside. I mean, free lessons, why not?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's interesting. In episode 62, I was talking to Irina Gorin about the way she teaches beginners, and she says, I just don't teach beginner students unless the parents are 100% committed and they're practicing with their students and things. It just doesn't work, she says. So you have a similar thing.
I agree with her.
Mm. Also, we were talking too about the pre-reading phase. So that part of time between taking on a new beginner, a young beginner, and actually starting them reading music. And for her, she'll do anything pre-reading between 4 and 8 weeks with students. And I, as people, I've spoken about it before, I just recently started a new student with a full term, so 8 to 10 weeks of no reading, and just improvising, creating rhythms, all this. Why is it important not to teach reading first, in your opinion?
Well, I'm going to one-up you anyway. I do 12 months and I win.
12 months.
Seriously.
Of just at least, creative singing, music making. Yeah. Great. Well, tell us firstly, before we find out what you do, why is that important to you?
Oh, I can't imagine teaching a student reading from the very beginning. I actually can't get my head around that, because it seems such hard work to read before you have an experience of what you're reading. I mean, we've all heard the comparison between music and language and how you wouldn't teach a child to read before you taught them to speak, right? And so, I mean, that just makes total sense right there. But for me, it's even more important in the arena of self-expression. If I have a student who comes to me for the first lesson, and the way I set up their lifelong music learning journey is to say, here's a piece of music that someone else has written, and I want you to play this piece of music. And if you can, you are musical. Mm. And is what our culture has said. Mm. If you can play Beethoven, you can tick the box because you're musical. And that comes through reading his piece and playing it exactly as we imagine he would have played it correctly, right? And it sets up a culture that says, I'm not musical unless I can play what a musical person who's proven because they've got written music can play. And I say, no, we are so innately music. It's part of our DNA. You can't ignore it. We live, breathe rhythmically with beautiful, perfect pitch when we speak. We don't talk like robots. And all of these things point to the fact that we are musical. So how do we get people in our Western culture to understand that? We unveil it. We allow them to take off the layers and to experience music from the inside out. And so they can say from the very first lesson, I'm musical because I play the piano. Mm. It emerges from inside out. And then I'm so musical that I think I could even create compositions and have them written down. And why would I do that? For no other reason than to allow other musicians to experience my musicality when I created that piece of music. So then we share our musicality, but it doesn't govern if we are or if we are not. And I love that idea of not having my music written in stone to prove that I'm musical or not.
Hallelujah. Amen. Amen.
That's my reading. It has to be out of the equation for a time. It has to be delayed so we can really ground our students in that philosophy. Mm. I am musical.
And I love the comparison between babies and infants babbling and just making sounds with their mouth while they try and work out how to say the right thing. Yes. That's the time that we don't give our students. They don't get that chance to just babble at the piano
while they work out what works. Yeah. So I'm preaching that. I've been preaching that for years. You must have heard me. So literally our Musicopolis program is just a bunch of babble.
There you go. I've never heard anyone describe their own program as babble, but you heard it first here.
That's it. You know, because that's what it's about. It's about curiosity, experimentation, exploration. Just having a love of getting your head around a brand new world of expression. And that's what we're doing on the piano. Mm. And at the same time, we're learning some pretty mighty key theoretical concepts, but they are happening like under the radar, you know, they're emerging. And because these kids are experiencing those concepts, then they own them. They become part of them. They become part of their journey. And our programs, I'll talk to you about that a little bit later as we get into the program. But what we actually teach, it's not just throw paint at the wall and see what happens.
Yeah.
Although that's fun.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, look, I think anyone listening will have to have been convinced by your comments just before about the importance of not reading first. So for those teachers who have been brought up, been taught themselves that, you know, here's middle C in lesson one, what are some of the things that they can do? Let's just leave your program aside. What are some things you would approach or recommend teachers approach with their students pre-reading?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. There's so many fun things to do, right?
Give us a few ideas.
You know what? Probably the first thing that comes to mind would be get your students on the black pentatonic. That's where we start.
So just black keys, right?
Just black keys. And here's the thing. Use the expression pedal. just get your kids to have it down. By default, all my students begin learning the piano with the expression pedal down, so your sustain pedal, which probably now I'm creating a whole lot of angst and, you know.
Yeah.
But the reason is it's called an expression pedal for a reason. It gives music life, especially on the pentatonic, because we know that every black note has been, you know, I mean, the sound waves create harmony just by using black notes. So as long as you don't fall off the logs and into the water, don't play on the white, you're fine. And so, you know, start with that. And if we're talking about really young kids, please go to where they're at. Find out what flicks their switch, you know. You know, are the boys talking about you know, Star Wars scenes? Are they into that? Or are the girls into the fairies and the princesses? Honestly, improvising is actually creating a musical dress-up corner. That's what we're doing.
Say that again.
Musical improvisation is setting up a musical dress-up corner. So what do kids do at this age? What's their favourite activity, not only at home but once they hit kindy and into preschool? There is always a dress-up corner.
Mm.
And they just flock to it, and they put on the little uniform of the fireman, and they, you know, have a little hospital corner, and it's the, you know, the playing the mummies and daddies, and it's the whole concept of role-playing, right? And what are we doing in music? We're just role-playing. We're just expressing, how does it feel like to be heartbroken? You know, have a look at all the titles of the million, billion-dollar music sales industry, and every title tells a story. Why? Because human beings are driven by story. So let's take it back to your question. Tip one.
Actually, sorry, no, let me interrupt you. Just on that, you've talked emotion very much, a lot of talk about emotion, and I think that's also something that gets missed when you start with reading. It becomes this very academic thing, and then we go and we ask students, okay, so let's add some emotion to that now. And I can see why your approach makes that an argument or a discussion you don't have to have with your students, because they're coming at music from an emotional perspective.
It's just exactly what I was going to say. I don't have students who perfect a piece, you know, when they then advance into Beethoven, when they perfect a piece, they don't play the emotion, they don't practice the emotion out. It's always there in every bar, in every note that they play, because they have a culture of music is emotional. And so, therefore, I tell you what it does, it preserves that absolutely perfect first love of why I'm playing this piece. Why did I choose this piece? Because I heard it, hopefully, I heard it and went, I love that piece. I want to play it.
Mm.
And what happens is traditionally we practice it, cut it up into so many pieces. By the time we finished it, we can't remember why we wanted to play it in the first place, because it's lost the first love and how hard it is to get that back. I say, don't lose it. Don't lose it in the first place. Love your practice. Love perfecting.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So pentatonic.
Yeah, so ideas, yep. So pentatonic black notes, pedal down.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then
and tell a story. So that's a simple thing you can do as well. That's relevant to the child.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, find out what they're interested in. And, I mean, we actually in our program we have a segment that's totally improvisational in the sense that nothing's structured even around the subject material. So totally away from the program called Play My Story.
Mm.
And the kids love it. So they'll bring in their pictures and they'll put it up. In fact, they're all racing to the piano. To start with, I don't get a word in. They all just got all their picture scrapbooks that they've done and they're lined up around the piano and they're going, can I go first this time? You know, it's just beautiful. They stick their picture up. They may explain some of their picture if it's not quite clear. And then they will play across the piano, usually adopting the theoretical concepts that we've learned so far, because obviously you want them to include those in their playing. But they've chosen the dynamic quality, the feel, the sense, the range of the piano, what's most appropriate for their picture, the speed, the tempo, the whole thing they've become completely in charge of. And what a liberating thing for a four-year-old to finally be in charge of something in their life.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep.
And so it's very empowering, and it's a performance moment, because even if it's a private student, they are performing for me and for mom and for their family, because their family is listening to that. So it's a validation of their musicality, which is utmost.
And yeah. do you get them to go home 1 week and draw this picture and then come back the next week with it, sort of thing?
It's actually a standard in my studio. Even my advanced students, they all compose, improvise, whichever end of that spectrum they're up to. And, of course, every composition comes from improvisation. And they bring to me their inspiration. I mean, obviously my older students don't really draw pictures anymore or bring ice cream containers full of caterpillars, which happened this week. I'm going, don't crawl out on my piano. Honestly, she bought this container of caterpillars and she played caterpillars all over the piano. It was priceless.
Yes. Great. So what do the older students bring?
Well, they verbally tell me what their inspiration was for their improvisation or composition, and I always ask them to describe. So they're learning to speak as musicians and as artists. So I'll ask them first, what was your inspiration? And they might go, you know what, this week I had my first day at my new job, and the most terrifying thing was getting on the bus and realizing this was the first day of the rest of my adult life, almost, you know, like it was really epic. And so they'll explain it. But then what I'll do is I'll say, okay, now tell me musically how you've expressed that on the piano. And so I'm asking them to tell me about the dynamics and about the key signature, about the process of the evolution from improvisation to composition. And it's good for them to think that through. It's not just I chose five notes at random and then I, you know, made them upside down and then I made quatrapuntal harmony around it and la, la, la. I want to know, how did they arrive at telling their story? Because that keeps that emotional context, yeah.
Do you listen to them first or ask about it first?
Oh, both ways.
Both ways, right. It's a great idea.
Sometimes I'll have the rest of my kids in my studio and my parents put their input in. They'll do the interpretation. So I won't hear anything I'll say today. We're not explaining a single thing. It's up to you. You literally have to tell your story through your fingertips on the piano. Go for it. And we'll tell you what you played. And it's amazing. Often it's either extremely different, but the same mood, but a really different, you know, environment, or it's uncannily close. Fun. That's
great. Okay, so let's talk about your program. It's called Musicopolis at musicopolis.com. And what ages does it suit, and can any teacher use your ideas?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so first thing is an exclusive announcement here on timtopham.com.
You heard it first.
You heard it first. We are now called, instead of musicopolis.com, and you can still find us there, there'll be a link towards that, but we're now called innermusician.com.
Ooh, here we go. I didn't even know this before the interview. That's nice.
I know.
Nice way to surprise me. I love it. Innermusician.com.
You're probably the first human being outside our little organisation here that's heard it.
Brilliant. I love the name too. It's so apt for what you're doing. What ages?
And the program is called Play a Story. So our program is, where do we start? To make it as simple as I can and make sure that I'm covering it in a sort of a logical thing, because I do, you know, love to tell a story. So let me start by saying that I've taught teachers all over the world to teach our program. We've had over 300 teachers teach our program, and we have about 1,000 students. We have about 4,000 views on our program material. That's cool, per month.
Nice.
That's
work.
Awesome.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. So it's being used, and what I love is that teachers feedback to me that the whole concept of playing this way and learning this way has changed their lives, because now music becomes part of their life instead of it being something they put into an hour practice or, you know, a few hours teaching it. They've actually kind of embraced it as part of their whole life. And for their students, the same thing. So basically what we're saying is, if the world was music, if the world could be heard in music, what would it sound like? I was giving a teacher seminar in San Diego many years ago now, maybe I'm thinking 5 or 6 years ago, and we had a masterclass. So I had six adorable, brand-new little people. I'd never met them before till that day. And they came in and I gave a public teaching class. Mm. And so we did it all, and at the end of the lesson they went just outside into the foyer area, actually just outside into the garden area, while I debriefed the teachers as to what had happened and that. And when they came back in for us to say goodbye to, one of the teachers that was just hovering around out there supervising said, you know what, we were standing out there, it's been drizzling, and so the ground is all wet, and in the garden there's these little shiny black pebbles covering the ground of the garden, and one of these little five-year-old boys picked up this brilliantly shiny, glossy black pebble, held it up into the sun and went, oh, I wonder what that would sound like if it was music. And I went, yes. So that's what we do, is we take ideas, circumstances, environments, and we interpret them musically. And so we've created three journeys, and so we've got hard copy books of all of the journeys, and basically each of these journeys take us through a completely different scene. So this first one is The Song of the Zephwind, and that's the forest with the butterfly that I mentioned earlier. And then we've got Ocean Lullaby, which takes our students throughout the ocean, so seagrass pastures, the sandy beach, coral garden. So they're beautiful illustrated books. And then the last one is one of my favourites, is Travel Notes, because I love to travel, by the way. Did you know that I'm heading off to head away?
Well, when this actually, you it will all be over by the time this goes live. That's a bit of a sad thought. Let's not talk about that.
No. My cases are just out of sight. Yeah. And a few hours. So we're going, it's just going to be mountain trekking. So Travel Notes is a story about a teacher who travels around the world and keeps a journal for her students, her music students. And the journal is literally the vehicle for opening the page and hearing, what would the music sound like coming from Italy, coming from Japan, coming from Ireland with the mist and the, you know, and Egypt and the USA and Australia. Have you ever heard an Aboriginal, didgeridoo played on the piano? You have to find out.
Yeah, that's right. Don't give that away. And for something, let's just take one of those, for example, let's say one of the locations is Spain. So the student gets some pointers. Do they get some patterns that they can explore from? How does it work?
Yeah. Okay. So within each journey, we've got multiple scenes, right? And each of those scenes covers what we call a musical motif. And that's the critical core of our program. So within that motif, we are learning key theoretical concepts, which include dynamics from fortissimo to pianissimo, basic chord structures of 1-4-5, 2-minor and 6-minor, major and minor triads, arpeggios, extensions, suspenders, rhythm, waltz, swing, all that, blues, you know. So it's very extensive what they learn, but they don't have to learn a whole song in order to learn those concepts. And that's why we cover so much in such a short time, because the motif could consist of 4 or 5 notes or a particular region or a particular interval on the piano. So little students can understand so much more if you just give them just, you know, 2 or 3 lumps of Play-Doh and say, this is how we're going to construct the Play-Doh to create this whole environment. So literally they're playing across the whole piano for about 1 or 2 minutes using four or five notes.
A limited note set that's very, achievable. Yeah. It's the same kind of concept as teaching. It's a pattern kind of teaching approach in some ways, isn't it? Motifs like
that. That is exactly what it is,
And exactly. As I've always said and I've been saying in our live training recently, patterns are the words of the musical language, and that's what students have to know. And the babbling, as you say, it's like, okay, here's a pattern, three black notes. Let's babble with it. Let's start down low. Let's go up high. Let's put the pedal on. Yeah.
Fast, slow, legato, staccato. How can we interpret this to make it appropriate emotionally for the scene that we're looking at? And the motifs, are so carefully selected. So there is an awful lot of underlying teaching philosophy of working out how do we get those precious few notes to have maximum impact in expressing this scene. In fact, last week we did Africa in Travel Nights in my class, and I have a South African family there, and I played one bar of Africa, and this enormous in-breath from her, she just went, oh, my goodness, you just took me home.
And I went, yeah. Oh, wow. Great stuff. And so what ages have you used this with?
The player story with the storybook, I use optimally from about 4 to 7-ish in there, and I use it as a complete exclusive program, so as a method, if you like, for 12 months. Usually it takes 12 months to go through all three journeys. We provide teachers with lesson plans, and I've actually recorded live lesson videos for every single lesson on the lesson plan. So, a teacher can just go straight in and watch the lesson plan, watch the video, get the gear together and teach it that day if they wanted to. Mm. Most teachers like to kind of get a bit of a broader scope of it. But so that's the age group that the students interact with the story part of Player Story or the book part of Player Story. But we also realise that kids grow out of books, which of course they never do. They think they do. And how do they grow out of it? Because they love the movies. Mm. And as adults, movies are an adult story teachable. Mm. And so what we've done is we've created a storybook for every scene that's both animated online, or you can buy the hard copy versions as well that go with it. But we've also created 2-minute movies of every scene. And so in these movies, there is no story, but it extracts the mood and the ambience and the background environment for each scene. And so then you express, so for Seagrass Pastures in the second book, the story is about how these grasses move and interact and all of that sort of thing. And there's, verbal motivation for your improvisation or inspiration. But with the movie, it's just this 2 minutes of this seagrass just moving like this and the sand twirling as the waves come in a little faster and then they fade off and it's gentle again. So as a musician, you are creating the movie soundtrack, the musical soundtrack for a movie. And I've got to tell you, especially teenage boys, wow, they love that because they all want to be movie composers.
Film scores. It is just so creative. I know people listening and watching are going to be going, wow, it makes so much sense. Why don't we give students a little film to compose music to? I love composing with my students. I do it a lot, but I've never kind of really done that. And here you've put it all together for us.
So I've created projects so you don't have to research, what makes a good movie to compose and how am I going to find a motif, because telling them the sky's the limit, well, the sky's just too high. Bring it down, give them, as you said, a little palette of colours and just give them an idea of playing within that environment. But, so what happens is that in those classes, a typical lesson would look like this. We would listen to, well, we first of all always do play my story, and when that's done, we listen to the storybook with the animated story and the voice and the sound effects and a musical score. So there's actually already an orchestral score, and it doesn't follow the motif, and it's not something that they're supposed to try and play. What it is, it's an emotional card setting, you know, it's like a place setting. So that they know what we're trying to achieve with this story. And then they describe how they feel about the music, and we take those words literally off the whiteboard and we put it onto the piano. So then I'll demonstrate the motif while I read the story, so that they're seeing, oh, yeah, oh, so now the butterfly is making a chrysalis and going to sleep for a long time. So my music is telling that story, and they're getting, oh, I got to tell the story here. Then they get on the piano and I show them the motif, which they learn in a matter of seconds. That's really quick learning. And then we round robin and they'll experiment by getting on, and I'll explain the story in bits, one section of the story for each student, so they get a little bit of a different feel as they play through. So then when they go home, they've got everything online. They've got a coaching session, which is actually like a lesson review summary of what happened during the lesson, where the motif is broken down into quick little, like about 4 or 5 2-minute teaching segments at the piano, showing exactly how to break the motif down, especially if they're beginners. That's really good. Parents can get back on board then if they've had a really busy day and they weren't really present. This happens. And then they watch the easy demonstration, which is a piano being played with the story at the same time, so they get to see the connection, which is really important. And then they go ahead and they can either play to the story with just sound effects and the text is just written up on the screen as they play, therefore someone else can read the story, so it becomes like an ensemble, because that's what an ensemble is, playing with other characters, right? Or they can actually play it with the story being read, sound effects, but no music, because
they're creating the music. Brilliant.
So that's how that part of the program works, and that's what I use exclusively for that 12 months. I also use the program alongside what I just regularly teach. And so for 10 minutes, say, at the very beginning, I like to do it at the beginning because it's a kind of a good relaxer, it's a good icebreaker, a warm-up, is we do one of the scenes, and if, especially if they're advanced students, I'll have them, again, listen to, watch the movie with the music to get that emotional context. And then I'll have them watch the advanced demonstrations at home so that they can actually, I have them pick 3 ideas from the advanced improv, which, of course, is still got the motif, but with all sorts of artistic license. So I have them pick 3 ideas. They have to articulate what those ideas were and demonstrate it in their improv the following week. So it can take 10 minutes, but it's critical to keep that foundation of, I am musically intuitive, music comes from the inside out, and I choose to create.
I know the first thing that people are going to be thinking is, I don't have time, Lindell. It sounds great. I've only got 30 minutes. I don't have time to put 10 minutes into this. What would you say to them?
Even if I was to just set a project, because actually, quite frankly, sometimes I don't either. You know, sometimes we're working towards a recital, or, you know, we're doing, if they're doing exams, it's power packed into that time. What I love about the program is that it's all online. It's all self-supportive. And so I could even take 30 seconds and I assign a project. I go, okay, look, the next project is, we're working on Sandy Beach. Look, it's a blues piece. It's awesome. You're going to love it. check out the motif. In fact, this is the motif. It's 12-bar blues. You know the blues. Get into it. I want to see you create a right-hand improv to go with that bass. Are you good to go? Yep. Okay, go for it. Don't forget to check out the demonstration, and I do want three ideas.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it's flexible. You can, yeah.
26.
And it also, it depends on what you consider is important too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if you cherish and value the importance of creativity, then you will find the time for it in your lessons. That's my take on it too.
I agree with you 100%. And if you don't, then, hey, you know, you could turn off now.
That's right. Well, look, I think there is a big movement in piano pedagogy around the world to more creative approaches. And so that's why it's just great that you've built this incredible resource and you've refined it over 10 years. And some of the stories you've told me of how you got the footage, like this isn't stock footage, guys, from some website that she's just paid for.
Lindell, no, I had has the wetsuit with the rips as I rolled around the broken edge reef to take the flipping footage under the ocean.
And the story of getting the icicles from, you went to the ski slopes, and yes, we have ski slopes here in Melbourne.
Yes, we don't in Perth.
Oh yeah, that's right. Look, just amazing. So I would love for people to check this out. I just want to ask a couple more questions, but we're going to finish up pretty soon. Is it how do you license it or use it? Do you just pay for it and go for it?
Yeah, so basically you can go to our website, innermusician.com. You can go to musicopolis.com or playerstory.com. They'll all get you there.
Okay.
And the teacher membership, so in order to teach the program, you need a membership. That gives you access to the program. A teacher membership is $180 per year, mm-hmm. and that will provide
you Australian dollars?
Yes, that's correct. Yep. And that provides you with the whole program to use in your studio for your students. As I said, the live lesson videos are in there where you're watching every lesson for half an hour, watching me for half an hour. I mean, wow, that's got to be costly.
That's priceless.
Wow. there's really comprehensive teacher notes that have got conversations that you're likely to have, particularly with parents, actually, not so much the kids because they, you know, get it. But for parents who are maybe more academically inclined, who are saying, when are they going to learn a real song? And you've got answers to that, if you're a member. There is chat group support, all of that sort of thing. And then as you bring on students, for them to be able to learn the program, they just have a $25 per level purchase. And that will give them access to the program for 12 months. That's per level, but you could also just pay $60 and you get all three levels for 12 months. If you need an extension beyond that, because as I said, it takes about 12 months to get through it, but a lot of kids just love to then have it for another year. Mm. So you can then just purchase another $15 extension for another 12 months, even if you bought all three levels or whatever.
Yep.
It's also good if you've got a sibling coming through and you don't, obviously you don't want to have to pay for the whole thing again, so $15 will give you another 12 months to get them on through. You jump in when that sibling is ready,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get immediate access again to everything you've purchased for $15 for the year. So
there's a fee for the teacher, an annual fee for the teacher to access everything, and then the parents for the child pay as they go as well. And that, you know, that isn't a cost that we need to bear as teachers. That's obviously just charged to the parents. And when they see the amazing outcome that this kind of stuff has, they'll be more than happy to pay. They'll know it's worth it. And I think the great thing is too, Lindell.
Sorry, I was just going to say our teachers can purchase the material for their students and have them linked into their teacher dash so they can actually see what activity their students are doing online.
Okay.
Or a student can go in and just purchase it directly as an individual and they can deal with it.
Yeah, sure. I was going to say that the great thing I think about this method and all the things that I encourage teachers to do is that you don't have to ditch your current way of teaching. This can be a brilliant add-on or alternative, particularly for that beginning, that pre-reading phase. If you're looking for ideas and you think that what we've been talking about makes a lot of sense, then here is a ready-made program for you.
Yeah. really easy to use, easy to teach straight out of the box. There's not a huge learning curve for teachers, unless this is also a brand new environment for teachers, you know, and that's precious. If you're a teacher and you've been teaching for 30 years like I have, if you're a teacher who's never done an improvisational experience, get on board and just do it for yourself. Mm. It's really rewarding. Mm. And then pass that on to your students. And that learning curve is just fun, you know. It's not an intense, oh, my goodness, I have to get these lesson plans into, you know, it's all there. Watch and go.
Yeah, that's great. And do you have some trial resources or some videos of you teaching that are freely accessible that teachers can find?
In fact, we've got sneak peeks. So once you get onto the website, you can have a look at those. As soon as you hit that, just look for sneak peeks. But we also, in fact, I'll give you some links, if you like, to add to the show notes to just a couple of little visual summaries of some of the conceptual stuff that we've been talking about today, and also some little sneak previews of those live lesson videos, if that will be helpful, because Absolutely. Then teachers can go, now, what does that actually look like? Literally, it puts flesh on the curricular bones, you know. Mm. What are the conversations that come up, and how do you play around with those conversations in a live setting? Mm. And you know what? We would love to offer your teachers a bit of a bonus, if that's okay with you.
Of course it is. I love hearing about this.
Share the joy and share the love. So
please.
We're going to offer a 20% discount on new teacher memberships for the next 4 weeks. So probably the best way to work that is if you just contact us through the website and ask for a voucher, we'll apply that to your membership as soon as you sign on.
Okay, so that's, you're talking now to the teachers who are interested, or will I give them, will we put the code on the show notes? What's the best? Will it be the same code for everyone?
Probably. Let's figure that out.
You know,
all right. We'll eat this in a few weeks because I'm going to be OS.
Beautiful, yeah.
We'll work on that.
But there will be a discount for all the viewers and listeners today. Thank you very much, Lindell. That is awesome. I'm loving what you're doing. And I think the other thing that I would say too is anytime teachers listening, if you are looking at trying something new with your students that's creative or a little bit outside the box, if you can possibly find a resource or a program that has online support for the student when they're at home that the parents can do, then it makes all the difference, I think. I think it is really, really important. And it's a reason why I like Piano Safari, for example. They've got so much online to help keep things ticking over during the week. It's so important.
Exactly. And really, literally, they're taking a teacher home for the week.
Mm, mm.
That's fantastic. And kids are so used to resourcing their learning online, more and more so in school, but also just YouTube. You know, they're learning stuff. It's an era of learning.
Brilliant. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Anything else that we've forgotten to mention? I think that was pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, I've had a ball, Tim.
Yeah, me too. Lindell, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. I can't wait till we catch up. I think.
Yeah, we're having breakfast soon.
In Melbourne. Beautiful. And then I'm over in Perth. Then I'm over in Perth for our Transform Your Teaching workshops in November, too. So we'll perhaps catch up then.
Yeah.
Yeah, be great. All right. I think we'll sign off there. Thanks again for your time. Enjoy your trip. Hope it goes well.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah, love you. Thank you so much.
See you later,
Lindell. Thank you for your job that you're doing, getting all of us teachers to communicate. Love it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for being a part of it.
See you. All right. Bye. Ciao.
Hi, everyone. It's Tim here again. Thank you very much for listening to or watching today's episode. I do hope you got something out of it. I put them together to be as relevant and useful to you in your studio and your teaching as possible. So do let me know your feedback. If you've got any questions, comments, critique, whatever it is, you can email me at admin@timtopham.com. Now, before we go, I did want to mention a few little reminders. Firstly, if you're looking for transcripts of every episode from episode 50 onwards are available at the show notes page. And you can either view the transcript on screen or you can download a PDF that you can use to research and refer to. To find the show notes of any episode of Tim Topham TV, just type in timtopham.com/episode and then the number. So, e.g., timtopham.com/episode20. Now, as you may have heard, I am offering currently you guys, my loyal podcast listeners, some of the most dedicated teachers I know, a $100 discount off annual membership of my Inner Circle. The code you need to access that is TTTVpodcast, all one word, and the place you're going to find out more about what you get for membership, the benefits, hear some testimonials of current members. The place you go is timtopham.com/community. Finally, if you have a suggestion for a guest, I would always love to hear about it. A lot of you guys have some fantastic connections. So if you're thinking of anyone that would be really cool to interview, please email me, admin@timtopham.com. We'll get to me and I look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see you in the next episode. If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtopham.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.